I saw my body on the floor. This startled me, for the body I then had was to my sight and touch identical with the one lying so quiet. I saw people hurrying, and heard the anxious talk, not yet comprehending my separation from the physical body. I turned to your old friend, and mine, and asked him what had happened. He answered, "Have you not been told when you talked with us in your son's home, that death was the separation of the inner from the outward body?" "I recall that statement," I replied, "but I never comprehended it." "You have just made that change," he said, "you are now an inhabitant of the spirit world and one of us." I was deeply impressed with what he said, but dazed. I could not realize that the something called death was behind me, and that in me there had been no change, for I was the same in appearance and thought as before. Then memory quickened, and I commenced to think of what it meant. I could not think clearly, and my guide said, "Come with me for a little time and rest, and all will be well with you." I went with him, and those I saw and what I was I will tell you another time. This is another's description. I remember seeing about me those that had been dead for a long time. This impressed me greatly, but I did not realize it fully. Then I felt a peculiar sensation all through my body. Then I seemed to rise up out of my body and come down quietly on the floor. I was in the same room, but there seemed to be two of me, one on the bed and one beside the bed. All about were my family in deep grief, why I could not tell, for my great pain was gone and I felt much better. Some of those whom I recognized as persons who had died, asked me to go, and with it thought I was outside and apparently could walk on the air. My next thought was that it was a dream and that I would awake and feel again the terrible pain. I was gently told what had happened, and I felt that God had been unjust to take me when I had so much to do, and when I was so needed by my family. I was not satisfied with the place I was in. About me there was a fog, and I started to walk out of it, but the farther I walked, the more dense it got, and I became discouraged and sat down by the wayside in deep grief. I had ever tried to provide the very best for those dependent on me. Where was my reward? Then someone approached, came as it were out of the fog, and I told him of my life work and complained of the condition I was in, and questioned the justice of it. He replied, "Yours was a selfish love, you worked for self. You should have made others happy as well as your own." He promised to help me in my great trouble, if I would help myself. Together we have worked, and now all is well, it is light and glorious. But that first awakening was not all that could be desired. My greatest disappointment after my awakening was when I returned to my old home, for I discovered that none could see or feel me and all grieved for me as one dead, and their sorrow held me. I wept with them, and could not get away, until time healed their sorrow. How terrible it is that the world that has made so much progress in many things knows little of this greatest change, and the little it does know has almost been forced upon it by a few that know this truth and have the courage to stand for it. These descriptions, as I review what I have written, do not give a fair idea of an average death change, and looking through my records I find another more normal. I left the physical world rich. I had little money, but day by day, during a fairly long life, by some act I made others happier, and so spiritualized and uplifted my spirit. Such was my only religion. When the separation approached, though I had no actual knowledge of what was to come, I had no fear. I had been very sick, felt greatly exhausted, and longed for rest. I realized the presence of my family and their grief. There came to my senses harmonious vibrations that sounded afar off, like string and reed instruments played by master hands. It seemed to approach and then recede, and was lost. It soothed and comforted me. Then I realized that others were in the room. I could not see their faces distinctly, and wondered at strangers coming in at such a time. Someone spoke, and, rousing up, I saw more clearly and recognized many of my friends whom I had thought dead. I was not startled or frightened, it was all so natural. They greeted me cordially and asked me to go with them. Without effort, other than desire, I arose and joined them and went with them, for the moment forgetting the grief of my family. I seemed to travel without effort. Then I met a great company of men and women with radiant faces, clothed in white and blending colors. Their greeting was one of joyous welcome, and happiness was in everything. It was like meeting old friends that had been gone for a long time. It was simply glorious and so intense that for a time I gave no thought to the tremendous import of it all. Then I looked about. There was harmony in everything. I was in a new country. About me I saw great variety of landscape, most picturesque mountain ranges, valleys, rivers, lakes, forests, and the corresponding vegetable life of all that I had known. It was suggested that I go to a rest house, where my strength would be restored. I didn't seem to fall into a deep sleep almost immediately. After a time I awoke, when someone whom I knew and loved said, "Come with me now and view your inheritance." I went, and the glory of it was, and is, beyond my power of description. I should like the privilege sometime to tell the world of the beauty in which I live, and the pleasure I find in the work allotted to me. This plane, and all planes, I am told, is governed by law, nature's law, the same as yours, and it is the privilege and duty of everyone to develop the spirit by study and helping others. There is much that I should like to say of my return to my family, but, as I am asked only to describe my spirit passage, I will leave that and tell you more concerning the joy of the spirit at some more opportune time. There are those in the next life who have qualified for, and are assigned to, the reception department, whose duty it is to solace and comfort such as are grief-stricken because of the sudden severing of social ties, as it seems to those taken suddenly out of the mortal. This is a description. I am here to describe as well as I can the actual scenes over here, as the newborn spirits, divested of their physical bodies, come over. They come to us, not one or two or three, but in crowds, by thousands and more, some not awakened to consciousness, some just waking, some fully conscious. Few realize for some time that they have passed the portal you call death, but as realization comes and they understand, their thoughts are of their strongest ties. What a commotion of feeling one hears! The same intense feelings exist when out of the old body as when in the physical, and those feelings are just as discernible to spirit sensation as before, only the mode of expression and reception is changed. As I was feeling my soul leaving the physical sheath, I heard mysterious chords of rhythmic melody rising and falling like distant waves of the sea. A voice said in thrilling gentleness, "My child, pass from vision into luminous light, from night to day, from death to life." Then a light beating slowly passed away from about me, and to my utter amazement I found myself resting at a place quite free and transcendent with divine light. A deep and gentle sound vibrating through the ethereal firmament filled me with joy and happiness, and nothing was perceptible to me except this vibration of the sound. I felt that I must wait till a divine messenger came to guide me into the regions yet unseen. The atmosphere of awe and reverence that swept over me for the moment gradually paled away and, rising as I thought, I walked through the darkness which then encompassed me. As I did this, my other hand was suddenly caught by someone in a warm and eager clasp, and I was guided along with an infinitely gentle but commanding touch, which I had no hesitation in obeying. Step by step I walked with a strange sense of happy reliance on my companion and guide. Darkness and distance had no misgivings for me. And as I went onward with my hand yet held in that masterful but tender grasp, my thoughts became, as it were, suddenly cleared into a light of full understanding of the celestial world and its joy. And so I went on and on, caring little how long the journey might be and even eagerly wishing that it might continue, when presently a faint light began to peer through darkness, first blue and grey, then white, and then rose. The light, so sublimely luminous, gradually condensed into matter, and in a moment a celestial being of beauty, richly wrapped up in pure white and silken robes, stood before me. After the thrilling sensation, caused by this sudden manifestation, had given a little way for courage and hope, I beheld the same figure transforming into an almost manly and commanding attitude, with radiant face and brilliant eyes now turned towards me. It asked, in a gentle but firm tone, whether I would like to remain there in the ethereal world and enjoy the pleasures stored up for me as a requital for my past life on the earth plane. Overwhelmed with awe and respect, I could give no answer. Seeing me thus puzzled, my guide placed his right hand upon my forehead and a gentle massage filled me with strength and fresh energy. I became bold and courageous, looked my visitor in the eyes, and knelt before him. He lifted me up gently and said I could for a time remain in those ethereal regions where all was pleasure and happiness. He said that the place I was then in was the destination of those who are recruited from amongst people who spend their lives and energy on earth for the sake of their fellow creatures, people who do great deeds for the uplift of the oppressed and harassed, the abode of people who showed equal compassion to both men and beasts. This was my welcome, such my second birth. This was my greeting when I crossed the frontiers of the afterlife. Chapter 4 After Dissolution. When the end comes at the close of life's short day, we with loving hands dress the vacant tenement and tenderly and reverently consign it to the earth, from whence it came, again to mingle with the elements. But what of the invisible inner body, the living, thinking individual that has left the physical housing? What is its vision, sensation, thought, experience? This is best described by one who passed through that change, one who had lived a good life and had necessarily entered into a fine environment. This description was not given me direct, but I can vouch for its truthfulness, for I have verified it. This spirit, describing where she went and what she saw immediately following dissolution, said, "You wish to know where I went on leaving the earth? Well, there seemed to be a period of unconsciousness. Then I awoke and found myself in an entirely different place from any I had known on earth. I was somewhat confused at first, most people are, and find it difficult to realize where they are and what has happened to them. I was not afraid, however, because I had believed I would be taken care of, and would go on living somewhere. My ideas about the afterlife, however, were very vague, as are those of the majority of people. Psychic work will change all that, however, and people will know better what to expect, instead of fearing and dreading the dissolution of the body, as so many millions do now. It will appear to them as it really is, just a sleep and an awakening. You are wondering, and have often wondered, why I was taken when I seemed to be, and was, so much needed on earth. You have blamed God, and thought it cruel and hard and not by any means an act of love. This is the result of your limited vision. I will give you a description of the place in which I found myself when I awoke after what you call death. It took me some time to realize the beauty of my surroundings, as my eyes were blinded by the sorrow which my going had caused on earth. The grief of my people kept me so sad at first that I was not able to see or think of anything but earthly sorrow. That is why grief for departed friends and relatives is so wrong, and is so harmful, both to those on earth and to those who come over. The longer that grief continues and the more hopeless it is, the more those mourned for are kept to earth. Instead of being able to go straight on when they come over, seeing and realizing the beauty and wonders of their surroundings, and helping others to see them also, they are kept in a state of helpless grief, which renders them incapable of helping either themselves or others. Fortunately, the grief of my people on earth was not of this desperately hopeless variety, and I was enabled in time to rise above it and get on with my work of helping others. This is a life of service. Self must be eliminated. That is why folk who have lived unselfish lives on earth get on so well here. They do not need the preliminary training which more selfish spirits need. It is a very long time before some spirits who come over are of any use at all in helping others. This is caused partly by their own selfishness and partly by the selfish grief of their friends and relatives on earth. That is why so many of the messages sent through are a plea to those relatives for a more hopeful outlook. All that I have said is necessary that you may better understand what I am about to tell you. When I had been enabled to throw off somewhat the effects of the grief which others felt for my passing, I began to see how beautiful the place I had been brought to was. It is where most spirits go on leaving the earth. They are taken there by other spirits and every effort is made to help them to forget the earth and its cares and worries. This lovely place is called the Palace of Light, because that is what is most needed by the spirits of human beings when they come over more light, to enable them to see and understand many things which have not been clear to them while on earth. Human vision, the earthly kind, is very narrow in most cases. People fail to grasp the wonder and beauty even of the earth, so it is no wonder that they need more light and a considerable amount of training before they can see and realize all the beauty and grandeur to be found over here. Everything is so surprisingly beautiful that, once their eyes are opened and the full majesty and splendor of it all begins to dawn on them, they are transformed and become beautiful likewise. Once this transformation is accomplished, their training is at an end and they can go on their way rejoicing in all the beauty of their surroundings, helping others to see and realize it too. It is almost impossible for us to help some spirits, as they have no desire to be different or better than they have always been. Prayer by those still on the earth is the only thing which can help them. It will give them a desire for better things. Until there is that desire in their hearts, they will remain much as they were when they were in the flesh. Their spirits still inhabit the earth and they are the evil, or sometimes just the mischievous, spirits I have told you about before. Prayer is not only a protection against them, but is also their only hope of salvation. Indifference is the greatest sin there is. As long as folk desire to be better, there is some foundation to build on. But if that desire is lacking, it is very difficult to do anything with them. I really cannot give you an adequate description of the beautiful palace of light. It is so marvelous and so stupendous that it would not be possible for anyone still on the earth to grasp its significance. It is not just a building, as the word palace might suggest to your mind. It is a wondrous land of light, where the beauties of nature, as seen on the earth, are brought to perfection. There we have sea, sky, hills, mountains, valleys and grassy plains, in all their beauty of form and coloring, but without blemish. There are no barren or desolate places and there is none of man's handiwork to mar all this loveliness. There are forests of noble trees, great rivers, waterfalls, lakes, streams of all sizes, all crystal clear, and lovely meadows carpeted with the most beautiful flowers, over which hover myriads of gorgeous butterflies. There are countless numbers of the most beautiful birds everywhere. Animals of all kinds abound too. Some of them are dainty and graceful, and others are very stately and dignified. It is one vast panorama of loveliness, for those who have eyes to see. The great pity is that it is so long before some spirits even begin to see it as it really is. Some of these spirits, who have not progressed far enough to see and realize the beauty about them, when communicating with their friends on earth, give them quite wrong and dissimilar impressions of conditions over here. You were wondering just what we mean by the term progression. It is a spiritual condition entirely, and has nothing to do with the place the spirits happen to be in. It is the developing and unfolding of the spiritual nature which is necessary before the spirits concerned can fully appreciate and enjoy the wonderful home prepared for them. Spirits are not obliged to stay in some particular place until they have completed their development. They are all free to go about and see these wonders of which I have been telling you, except that they are not allowed to go and worry the children in their carefree land. Until they develop spiritually, they cannot appreciate all the wonders about them. I have not told you anything about the music we get here, except that which the birds make. Have I? There is always plenty of beautiful music to listen to. All kinds of instruments are played, and those who desire to do so can play in this great orchestra. Then there is the singing. It is wonderful. Everyone is free to join in this great paean of praise. Those who have not been able to sing as they liked on earth, and have always desired to do better, are able to realize their longing here. It is good to witness their joy over this, when they have progressed sufficiently to hear the singing, and when they are able to join in it, their happiness is complete. Let it not be inferred that all who have experienced this change have such a delightful experience. The plane one reaches and the character of one's surroundings depend on the refinement or spirituality of the individual. Each will find the conditions he has fitted himself for, and they are such as money cannot buy. Another has this to say: I appreciate your kindness in receiving me so kindly. I speak to you tonight about my experiences in the spirit world, as you call it. I call it the higher existence. In describing my passing to the higher, progressive life, I am pleased to say to you that I am giving my own observation, and I do not expect you to accept it as being the testimony of other friends who may have passed over with what they met. I have nothing to do, I have only to state what I have experienced. I may state, concerning my experiences on the earth, that I lived for a long period of time, a little over 90 years, and I led, shall I say, a fairly good life. I should like to say concerning the latter days that, though old in years, I was not at all feeble in body or mind, but as I advanced I felt my powers were failing, and that soon I should be called to leave the scenes of earth for something greater and grander. And so it happened. I remember well, on one summer's day, arising in the morning and feeling weak in my body but without pain. It was a weakness, the result of natural decay of the system. And I remember on this occasion that, as the day advanced, I felt more weary. I laid me down upon a couch and fell into a kind of sleep, not a perfect sleep, because I was partially conscious of persons around about me. I awoke somewhere about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, looked around, and spoke to one or two near me. One was my attendant, who came and asked if I should like something to drink. I said I should. I lay back and waited, and as I did so I felt a strange but not unpleasant feeling coming over me. I can only describe it as a sensuous drowsiness, which seemed to be gaining upon my faculties. The scenes round about me were fading, almost imperceptibly at first, but passing away from me. I was conscious only of that which was just round about me, and then that also seemed to fade away, and my sleep or weakness was merged into sleep which became profound. How long that could have continued I do not know, but after a time I again returned to consciousness. These are the only terms I can use to convey to your minds my experiences. Then I realized that I, the ego, was there just as really as before. I realized that I, the personality, was there, though some change had taken place. I felt as one feels who had dropped something which had burdened him, as a man who had carried a load for a considerable distance, a load that had not been extremely heavy or painful, but still a burden, and I had left it behind somewhere. And then, dawning on my spiritual senses, I was conscious that I was in some other state of existence, wherein I was not subject to physical forces as I had experienced them on the earth plane. For instance, the wind did not blow upon me, the sun did not shine, nor did the cold affect me. This I found and experienced with great joy. In place of it I found what you would call, on your mundane sphere, an even temperature, a calm and placid state. I felt that if peace and contentment could be reached, I had reached it. And then I was conscious that round about me there was an innumerable company of people, they were fellow countrymen. As I gained a little more experience, or perhaps, as you would say, as my consciousness deepened, I knew that I was attended by spiritual messengers or attendants. Looking to the one upon my right, I said, if not openly, I said it within myself, because the ego speaks within itself, because it is mine. This being is perfection, divining my thoughts, the guide said to me, no, you are being perfected. There is only perfection in the infinite. Him thou shalt know, with him thou shalt come in contact. This helped me considerably. If my guide, my messenger, who was to conduct me through this higher existence, was so perfect in mind, so perfect in every way, what then would be the author of his perfection? I was satisfied. Chapter 5. Where is the afterlife? Where is this afterlife? Just where do they live? Where are its boundaries? These are questions that I have some difficulty in understanding, and much more in explaining, and I am frank to admit that I have not had all the information sought on this subject. However, I have some knowledge, gained both from my friends in the spirit world and from my ability to deduce from common facts. Let it be remembered that those in the afterlife have frequently said that every physical thing of this earth was but a poor imitation of what they have, though that all things exist first in the invisible before they can be reproduced in the visible, and that all that we have is a reproduction in form of some of the things that exist there. Here is what one said on this subject. We have often told you, and tell you now, that your earth and all things of your earth have their exact counterparts in the spirit world, just as real, just as tangible, just as substantial, to the inhabitants of this world, as material things and forms are to the inhabitants in mortal form upon your earth. If this be true, if we have earth and rocks, so do they, if we have shrubs and trees and growing grains and flowers, so do they, if we have houses, schools, great buildings, so do they, if we have oceans, lakes, rivers, and flowing streams, so do they, if this earth is peopled, why not theirs? I am told they have also many things that we have not, as they cannot be clothed in earth garments nor function on our planet. The density of that plain differs from ours, as the density of our atmosphere differs from that of the water, in which marine life functions. We move more rapidly and with greater freedom than the life that exists in the deep, so those in the higher etheric plane move more rapidly and with greater freedom than we do all because the material conditions become higher in vibration as we ascend the scale of motion, and there is more resistance the lower we descend. Striving for more detailed description, I asked a spirit in our work one evening. Where is the spirit world, what of its substance, and where are its boundaries? The spirit answered. It is difficult to explain to you who know little of matter, the location and boundaries of the various planes where we live. First let me impress upon you the fact that energy, that is, life, cannot express itself except in substance. The idea that spirit people function without substance and that they and the plane in which they live are unsubstantial, is preposterous and illogical. The gases that compose water, taken separately, are as substantial as when united. Why should it be thought impossible, since matter was created, for nature to create other material than physical, to create spirit material? There are millions of worlds inhabited by human beings in that space you call the sky. Don't for a moment think that yours is the only world, and that God made the universe for you alone. This spirit world is in reality just as much a part of your planet as the earth and rocks you tread upon. Around and about your globe, and forming a part of it, a separate, material, concentric belts or zones, varying in width and vibratory action, and therefore in density, into which all mankind and all planetary life passes, on the happening of that event you call death. I only know the boundaries of these planes in which I live and labor. I do not know any more about the boundaries of the planes beyond me than you know of the planes beyond you. Others have reported of these localities as follows. Your Earth has belts, but they exist in a cruder condition than those of Jupiter and Saturn. The belts or zones that lie around your Earth are designed for the habitation of spirits out of the body, and as they outgrow the passions of Earth and become more refined, they pass to another or higher zone. I have discovered, while living here, that there are several magnetic belts encircling your Earth, similar in general appearance to the belts that surround the planet Jupiter, and beyond those zones there exists, outside Earth's spirit sphere, a vast spirit world traversing the innermost heart of space. Another said, I, too, am permitted to gaze back in this way at earthly scenes, and, for a time, to dwell on earthly memories, while bringing to you for your world some experiences and observations of my own, both in mortal existence and in the spheres. I have observed that there are innumerable states and conditions and diversified experiences in spirit as on earth. We may illustrate by different highways, thus. Let one condition be represented by a certain highway, and another condition by another and differing highway, leading through a different country. As no two highways of your world lead over the same country and present the same scenery to the traveler, so of the children of Earth no two travel over the same highway or have the same experiences, to each are presented different scenes from those presented to any other. One person traveling one road is landed into the spirit world at one point, and one on another road enters spirit life at another point, and a third, on yet another road, enters at a different point from either of the others, and so on the endless procession moves, landing its infinitude of differentiated individualities, and each one has a different idea to relate, therefore note to relate the same story of the earthly journey. But the varied highways of earth continue into eternity, and the traveler on each goes eternally on his own road from the earth life, and thus all travel on in the spirit world, having different experiences here, as with you, And, on returning to you, we have different experiences and different descriptions of the spirit world to relate to you, according as each has realized for himself. This is another spirit's report.